Hello there, Podcast Land. This episode of the Behind the Barricade podcast is sponsored by Podcast Texts. Podcasters, do you want to expand your podcast reach to 360 million, maybe even more people? Do you want to make your podcast searchable on Google, Yahoo, even Ask Jeeves? Then look no further than Podcast Texts. You can increase your podcast reach exponentially. You can also reach the deaf and hearing impaired. They can read your podcast. It's unbelievable the amount of ways Podcast Text can help you. Maybe you have a few links you'd like to include. Not a problem. You can include them thanks to Podcast Texts. Seem too good to be true? Visit PodcastTexts.com to create a more dynamic user experience for your audience today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Behind the Barricade podcast, and here are your hosts, John O'Connor and Daniel Tao.
Happy Thirsty Thursday, Podcast Land. Welcome to the Behind the Barricade podcast. My name is John O'Connor. Like always, I'm with Daniel Tao. And today marks episode number 93 of this thing we call the podcast. And today, I talk with Mr. Tyler Ross. He's the lead guitarist of the melodic hardcore band Being as an Ocean, which I don't even think that's a good genre to put them in. It's weird. If you'd like a mix of 90s emo mixed in with a little Under Oath, mixed in with, I don't know, I guess a regular hardcore band, hardcore vocals type of deal, this is the band for you. Check them out and let me know what genre you'd put them in. I'd say, I don't even know what I'd say, but I'm tired. I'm running about 3 hours sleep right now, so I'm going to keep this somewhat quick until I go to sleep and just pass out. But we talk about their upcoming U.S. tour with Enter Shikari on the Take to the Skies 10-year celebration. It starts Friday, March 10th in Pomona, California, and Saturday, April 1st, April Fool's Day in beautiful Dallas, Texas. And I will be at the New York City show at Irving Plaza on March 23rd. We talk about that tour a little bit. We talk about him living in Paris. We talk about architecture. We talk about the Paris music scene. We talk about their upcoming album out on June 9th called Waiting for Morning to Come. If you're a big fan of Being as an Ocean, this is the podcast for you to listen to right now. But first, I just want to say thank you all for liking us on Facebook. If you haven't already, facebook.com/behindthebarricade. On Twitter, you could go and give us a nice follow at Behind the Cade, C-A-D-E. Instagram, I swear to you, we're going to be redoing that. We're going to be putting up more concert photos the more we get out to concerts. And that's instagram.com/behindthebarricade. YouTube, we're going to be putting up all our podcasts up on there, or I think up to episode number 85 is up on there. And then there's the live episodes, but we'll figure it out. We'll clean that up. That's youtube.com/behindthebarricade. And yeah, that's about it. So here it is, episode number 93, Tyler Ross of Being as an Ocean, right now. Yes! About the same. Just got home from work. Had to deal with traffic. Always fun.
What city do you live in?
I'm in New Jersey. I'm right outside of Newark in Jersey City. So I'm about 15 minutes outside of New York City.
Nice. I have a really good friend that lives there in Montvale.
Okay, yeah, that's up north. I live in Kearney. It's cool. If you've ever seen The Sopranos, basically the entire opening sequence is filmed in Kearney. So.
Nice. Yeah, I've only watched the first few episodes.
Didn't really get into it.
I was watching it at the studio, and then I guess I had other stuff to do.
Yeah, I mean, you're a busy guy. I don't think Sopranos is high up on your priority list.
I love shows, but someone was tracking, and one of the interns or assistant engineers was like, "Oh, let's start Sopranos or something." And then he got we went and got a box of Krispy Kremes, a dozen, and he ate all dozen of them and fell asleep.
Oh my right god!
There. That was pretty crazy. That was pretty hilarious, but that guy is really funny.
My god, that is amazing. How he's, I guess, still alive today is pretty damn impressive.
He's not even like a heavy guy. He's like a thin guy. I don't know how he was able to destroy a box of a dozen donuts like just at one time.
Oh my god. And that's very, you know, not courteous sharing, you know, with the rest of the band.
It was just me and him, and he was like, I think he got a baker's dozen, so because I think they give you one free. So he had like 13, and he's like, you can have one if you want. So I had one, and then he literally ate 12 and immediately fell asleep.
Jesus Christ.
It was hilarious.
Oh, my God. But yeah, Krispy Kremes are delicious.
And so I forget, this is a podcast, right? Not typed up.
No, not typed up at all. So
cool.
Whatever you say, people will hear.
Cool. I like podcasts. It's a cool way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome that it's like a growing medium because, you know, you have the big time names like, you know, Joe Rogan, Bill Burr, Mark Maron. They have like their podcast. And then you have like the smaller level ones like, you know, Talk is Jericho. You got Lead Singer Syndrome with Shane Told of Silverstein, you know, then you have us.
Yeah, but that's awesome.
Yeah, I honestly think podcasting is going to be like the wave of the future because there was
cool. It's really cool.
Yeah, and you know, it's free flowing. It's not like, okay, I'm here with Tyler. Okay, Being as an Ocean, new album. Okay, you know, the Q&A banter. It's not what we do, and me personally, I don't like it at all. So
yeah, I think I prefer podcast interviews with like artists that I like, and even, you know, my own friends in bands.
Yeah.
Like I listen to their podcasts and I like say I have a good friend who I tour with and I listen to, he did a podcast interview and I listened to it and I actually get some cool insights, like listening to a real conversation rather than a quick blurb in a magazine where it's just,
yeah,
I don't know. I like the podcast better. So
no, absolutely. And you know, that blurb in the magazine could be, you know, just really taken out of context too. You know, you could be like talking on a point and then say something that's somewhat controversial and they only print that. So people always get like the wrong idea.
Of course. I mean, magazine journalism can be really cool if it's done really right. But it has to be really good. Like I remember I picked up, you know, I read through AP and stuff like that because we're in it, and they do a good job. But I remember one day I was looking at some music magazines. And I picked up Rolling Stone, and I remember thinking, like, man, they have some real journalism in here. Like, I don't know. I just remember I was really impressed with the writing, and I was like, this isn't just the like kid, you know, neighborhood kid with blog asking like, so when's the next album out? Like they were writing some cool articles, and I remember thinking, man, I really respect that and that's cool. And I just remember thinking that they were doing a really good job.
Yeah, I mean, Rolling Stone has basically, I don't even think it's even a music magazine per se anymore. I think it's more about like pop culture and like news stories. It's like Vice in a magazine form.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
and Vice has a magazine too, right?
I believe so. I know they have their website, which is incredibly popular, and I think they also teamed up with, what was it, HBO or something like that for Viceland?
Yeah, they have a bunch of big stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, the one thing I don't like about Rolling Stone is if you go back a couple years with the whole Boston Marathon bomber, that they put the actual bomber's face on the cover. That kind of like was a little disturbing.
That's kind of rough. Yeah, I'm sure they took some flack for that. I didn't know about that, but that makes sense.
Yeah, which they did, but you know, it was more glorifying him than actually be like, okay, yeah, this is the motherfucker that did all this damage, you know.
So yeah, that's tough. Definitely shouldn't be doing that.
No, but I mean, then again, I don't work for Rolling Stone, so
of course.
But anyways, you're actually calling from Paris, right?
Yep. Yeah, I live here. So I'm just here, and I'm going to go back to California on Monday to start a tour.
Yeah, you got the Enter Shikari tour coming up.
Yep, that's right.
I'll be in attendance for that at Irving Plaza in New York City. Tickets on sale now.
I think, yeah, that's going to be awesome. Man, we've never played at Irving Plaza. I mean, there's a lot of venues in New York City, so we played a different one every single time. There's a lot of cool ones. Like, we played some really cool small halls. Our first show in New York City was at Tammany Hall, which is now a karaoke bar. It got closed down. It's not a venue anymore.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, Tammany Hall is a karaoke bar now. It's not and it's like revamped. It's not a venue. And then, of course, we play like Webster, Gramercy, and, you know, quite a few others. And I think Irving Plaza will be a first for us. So that's cool.
Nice. Yeah, it's a great little venue. It holds about maybe like, I want to say, 1,000 to 1,200 capacity. And it's like a multi-level thing, kind of like Webster Hall, but a little bit smaller, and it feels more intimate.
Cool. How many is it, like three stories, like three levels of people, ground, balcony, balcony two?
No, just a ground and balcony. It's not like Terminal 5 where it's just level on level on level.
Still cool, though. I love that, like, there's this venue in London called Coco.
Mm-hmm.
That's like pretty big and really pretty, and it's got like ground and then two or three balconies, and it's so cool. Really cool place.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love going to different venues just to stand in different areas just to see, okay, what do I like best? You know, coming to another show.
And yeah.
It's great when you have so many options instead of, you know, going to like a random dive bar and here's the stage. Okay, have fun.
But, of course, yeah, it's cool when the setup is really cool. I went to my girlfriend took me to a venue here in Paris called Silencio.
Mm-hmm.
That's like this really special venue. It was designed by David Lynch. And David Lynch is like this director, artist, who, you know, he made Twin Peaks, and
was he also the guy that did Social Network, or am I thinking of something else?
No, I know who you're talking about, but no, that's not him. But he made a famous film called Mulholland Drive.
Okay, yeah.
And anyway, I guess in Mulholland Drive, there's a club called Silencio, and then he actually designed and they built this venue based on the club from the movie. So exists here in Paris. So I'm trying to look and see if it was Mulholland Drive. yeah, it's Mulholland Drive. The club's called Silencio. It's in Paris. It's real. It was designed by him, and my girlfriend took me there, and she works for a major record label, so she had an artist playing there, so we could just go and check it out, and it's really cool. The club is like members only, and you pay a lot of money, like a couple thousand dollars a year, and you can go to every show.
Oh wow!
And they bring like super special artists, and the venue is really special. It's not like, just, I bring it up because we're talking about cool venues.
Yeah, definitely.
This is a very small venue. It's kind of like underground. Like, you go downstairs and everything's like, there's a bunch of mirrors and hallways and like several bars, and it feels like super interesting. I guess I haven't seen the movie yet to see what it's like in the movie, but I bet that would give you an idea of it. But yeah, it's a really interesting venue. It's not even centered on the stage. There's like a bar, a hallway, and then the stage is just like kind of like a room in this underground network of like hallways and stuff.
Holy shit.
It was cool to see a show down there. It's like very exclusive and like cool and
yeah, it sounds like a speakeasy type of environment.
That's exactly what it is. Like a speakeasy venue instead of a speakeasy bar. That's definitely what it's like. It's kind of like like a speakeasy where there just happens to be a band playing, but they bring some like serious and cool and like big acts in there, and then these people can go see it if they're like a member. Pretty cool.
Now, I'm guessing membership is you have to know someone who's already a member. They don't open it to the general public.
Probably, yeah. Or maybe it's just really expensive. I don't know too much about it, but I know it's pretty expensive, and it's by the year, and then you get to see all the events that year. And pretty cool.
Yeah, that's very cool. I wonder why most venues don't do that. Like House of Blues would be perfect. You know, have like a little like jumper pass. So like if you want to see a show in House of Blues Boston, you could also go to the one in Hollywood or go to the one down in Florida. Something like
I'm
that.
I'm surprised House of Blues doesn't have like a pass like that.
Yeah.
That would make sense. That would really make sense, especially for a chain like that.
Exactly. Or like something like AEG have something, or Live Nation New York. Like we just talked about like five different New York City venues. Imagine all of them being connected through Live Nation, and for a fee of, let's say, I don't know, $2,000 to $2,500 a year, you get access to any and every show.
Yeah, for like true like music lovers and music like concert goers. I bet someone will do that at some point. Because that strategy is trending upward, the subscription strategy, you know? Like, I mean, Pro Tools, I don't know if you produce or know producers or engineers, but you know, Pro Tools is subscription now.
Yeah, I heard about that.
You don't buy Pro Tools, you subscribe to Pro Tools. and Photoshop and everything too. You don't buy Photoshop anymore, you subscribe to Photoshop.
Yeah.
Like everything is like this. So it makes sense to subscribe to concerts and then you just go whenever you want.
Yeah, that would be amazing. And I think they had an app there. I think it was called Jukely or something like that, like J-U-K-E-L-Y, if you want to look that up. I think it had something to do with like New York City venues. Like these are like small underground ones, but it was like $20 a month and you get to go to like a different group of shows each month or something like that. But it was like unlimited too. And they only had in like, I think the New York City area and I want to say L.A., but they're branching out further and further.
That's dope. I mean, that works for a city. If the city is, if the city is happening and there's a bunch of, like, you know, I live in Paris, or if in Paris it's the same, in New York it's the same. Like, in Paris there's a show every night. I can look up on, I basically would use Bands in Town and I go to Paris and I can, not only every night is there a show, I mean, there's probably 100 shows every night in the somewhere in the city, but I think every night or at least every week an artist, one of my favorite artists is playing, like, because Bands in Town captures my Spotify artist.
Ah, there we go.
And I put in Paris and it shows me, you know, what artists that are saved in my Spotify when they're playing in Paris. And it's like, you know, at any time I could look it up and be like, oh, you know, Bon Iver is playing, here next week, and then Say Rose is playing the next week, and this rapper is playing here the next week, and it's all, something's always happening, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. I didn't know Paris was that into music.
Oh, yeah, it is, for sure. I mean, there's unlimited venues and clubs and bars and all that stuff. Yeah, I mean, there's just always something. It's just like Paris is just the New York City of France, you know?
Yeah. Only a very nicer version.
I mean, it's just the same, honestly. I know that it's nicer in the perception of like French culture and French people and all this stuff, but like it's just their version. Like it's not necessarily nicer or worse. It's just the French, you know, way. I mean, if as Americans we see it as cuter or like, you
more
know,
quaint type of deal.
Yeah, more. It's not even more. I mean, I'll tell you where the quaintness comes from. I don't know if this is interesting to people on the podcast, but I know.
Who cares?
But,
it's interesting to me and you. That's all that matters.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a real thing. I mean, so I don't know exactly why, but I'll tell you an answer to two questions. So, okay. So basically, if you wonder how is the Eiffel Tower so like famous and, you know, picturesque, and why do we see Paris as so quaint? It's basically because there's a limit to building height. So you can only build buildings here like 6 or 7 stories high.
Oh, wow.
Not like New York. So that's why when you see a picture of New York, the buildings, the skyscrapers go out of frame, and you see the skyline as this descending row of buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the picture of New York that you have in your head, is like you're standing in the street, you see a bunch of yellow cabs, and you see skyscrapers going up out of frame, you know?
Yeah.
And then the picture you have of Paris is like this quaint little 18th century or whatever. I mean, I have to, you know, look up the right exact century where all these buildings were made, but a little bit old, and like every building is like 6 stories high. So you always kind of get this. Every picture you see of Paris has the corner of the building, and then you see some sky in there because there's no skyscrapers. You're not allowed to build them. You can only go like 6, 8, 9 stories max. And that's why the Eiffel Tower is so picturesque, because it's actually pretty huge. I mean, it would only be as big as like, I don't know, some skyscraper in New York. It's not taller than like every building in New York. But the thing is, it towers above the city.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the buildings are only allowed to be like 8 stories tall max, and then the Eiffel Tower is like, I don't want to say something wrong, but I mean it's whatever, at least 30, 40, 50 stories. Yeah. So it looks like a giant toy. Like it's if you look at an aerial view of Paris, it's like towering above the entire city, because we don't have skyscrapers here.
Yeah.
Not allowed to have them. That's what makes it seem quaint. I mean, it's a bustling, I mean, it is like New York for, you know, for France, but it's just, we don't have this, there's no skyline, there's no skyscrapers. That's what, when you picture New York, you picture that skyline, you could draw it on a piece of paper in silhouette and people would say, oh, that's New York City. But in Paris, you can't draw that. If I can't draw a set of buildings and you say, oh, that's Paris, but I can draw the shape of the Eiffel Tower and you say, oh, that's Paris.
Gotcha.
So that's what defines the shape of the city. I mean, it's cool. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I went to Paris once back in 2006, so I really don't remember it. All I remember is the Eiffel Tower having a elevator, which was pretty cool. It shot you all the way up, and then like in the observation deck, it actually, I think it was like all windows around, and like down they had like a little table area saying, okay, New York City is X and X miles away in this direction, or, you know,
and
London.
That's pretty cool. That's cool.
Yeah, I wish more places had that, like more iconic buildings, like the Sears Tower in Chicago, or, you know, the Empire State Building in New York. I don't know if they have them or not. I've never been up there. But, you know, it would be pretty cool to have.
Yeah, I think I went up in the Sears Tower one time and I went to college at the University of Chicago, and it was orientation, and some kid pointed me out the observation deck and was like, if you can see this, like, little patch of grass or whatever, he's like, that's Canada. You can see to Canada from the Sears Tower.
Oh, wow.
Or, yeah, I mean, there's another tall building in Chicago. It might have been not the Sears Tower, but this other building that I can't remember the name of. But
is that the one with the glass floor where you could step out onto it?
Yeah, I think so. I know what one you're talking about. It was, I don't know, maybe, oh, John Hancock Maybe the John Hancock Building. I think that's what it was. Right. Anyway, yeah, you can see Canada from this building because it's so tall. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is awesome. Yeah, I'm assuming it'd have to be like a clear day, like it can't be any fog or anything, but
probably not. Yeah, I mean, it's got to be pretty clear to have the visibility to. I mean, if it's clear, you can see really far. I mean, some cities it gets so foggy you can't see anything at all in front of you, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I'm guessing like Seattle would be like that if you go on top of the needle.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So right before we get into actually talking about music, why did you choose Paris? Did you like go there once and fall in love with it, or?
I fell in love with a girl here who's standing in front of me and kind of like not mocking me, but trying to mess with me while I'm saying that. Yeah, I we ended a tour actually. Okay, so we ended a tour in Portugal. Mm-hmm. We played 3 shows in Portugal, and which my friend who lives in Montvale, he played drums for.
Oh, okay.
He's not our drummer. He was never our drummer.
He was a fill-in?
And he just, not just a fill-in, but he saved our ass because we had a drummer leave, and basically we had 3 more shows in Portugal and we had no one to play drums. So he always saves us. Like, he was doing merch for us, and he always does merch when it's crazy, but it's like at the last second, like, we always ask him. Like, I think he wasn't even supposed to do merch on that tour, and then a week before we were leaving to Europe, like, he's from New Jersey, and mm-hmm. you know, you would think he need to plan a little bit more to go overseas. I mean, and I was like, someone bailed or something, do you want to come to Europe? And he was like, sure. And then he's there, and he wasn't even supposed to be there. And it's like, hey, our drummer, like, Bale, do you want to play drums? Because I know he plays drums. And he's like, and there's no time to practice. So no. He just has to learn it on the bus on Spotify and just air drum it. And then we just played the shows in Portugal. Like, literally, that's it. We just got to Portugal and just stepped on stage, and we're just like, every song he played, it was the first time he had ever played that song.
Mother of God.
He had never, like, we're performing in front, it was like sold out every night, and when he's playing a song, it's not just the first time he's performed it with us, it's the first time he's played the song on a drum kit. He's only listened to it. That's all he's done. He's just heard it on Spotify and thought about it, and then he's just performing it. Like, so he's crazy. But anyway, so long story short, which it is kind of a long story, but
say it, we got time.
Okay, I'll make it fast. So I was in Portugal. I was in Porto. Mm-hmm. I was on a flight to Amsterdam. My girlfriend's laughing because she's heard this story many times. I was on a flight to Amsterdam. I was going to go to Amsterdam. I had been in Amsterdam before the tour, and I was going to go back after because I liked it. But then I was kind of thinking, well, I've already been to Amsterdam. I could go somewhere else. And my flight connected in Paris. So it was Porto, Paris, Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. So I just had to stop in Paris. And I started kind of thinking, oh, I could go to Paris instead. But I had this Airbnb book that I was going to stay in Amsterdam. And so I couldn't bail on that. Yeah. That was like not possible. So it wasn't really a thought. And then right as I'm about to board the plane to go to Amsterdam, the guy emails me from the Airbnb and says, it's raining in Amsterdam. There's a leak in the roof in your Airbnb. I'm so sorry, but you can't have this one. I'm going to have to cancel. I'm going to have to get it fixed. I can help you find another one. And I just, as I'm walking down the gate, I just text him, forget it, cancel everything, refund me. Don't worry about finding a new place. Just refund me everything. And he was like, okay, if that's what you want to do. And so I get on the plane to Paris. And while I'm on the plane and we haven't taken off and I still have service, I search for an Airbnb. Like, I pick my area, I pick my date, I pick instant book only, like the one where you can just for sure like do it if it's open.
Mm-hmm.
And I just find a place and I instant book it. And then I message the guy like, hey, because Porto is only like an hour from Paris. So I message him like, hey, I'm landing in an hour. Can you be ready with the key? And he's like, yeah, if you can get, like, I'm going out tonight, but if you can get here within, you know, by five or whatever, then yeah, I have the key for you. So I literally fly to Paris, land to connect to Amsterdam, but instead of going to Amsterdam, I walk off the plane, walk into Paris, hail a cab, just go straight to that address. He gives me the key, and bam, so I'm just in Paris. So I'm living there for like a couple weeks. Until I have to go record. So I live there. So I live there for a couple weeks alone, and I wrote Dissolve and OK.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the two songs that are out right now from our new album.
Mm-hmm.
So I live there. So I literally, I had my guitar and my computer in my hand, and I went to Paris, and in this Airbnb that the guy gave me, that's where I wrote Dissolve and OK, just alone in my apartment. And this is where I met my girlfriend. And then, I mean, I just immediately, we totally clicked. And she was like, oh, I want you to come back to Paris. And I was like, yeah, I want to come back. So after I flew back to America to record Dissolve and OK, then I just flew back to Paris. And I've been living here for a year now. Over a year.
Oh, geez. Wow.
So that's pretty much that.
So how did you end up meeting your girlfriend? Was she in the Airbnb in the area or?
She's laughing at me. We met on Tinder.
Okay. Hey, nothing wrong with that, man.
We met on Tinder, we met on the last day before I had to fly back to America. And obviously, you know, it's hard to explain when you first meet someone, oh, I'm in a band, I need to go record in the studio, I'm leaving for America tomorrow, and all this stuff. So that's like kind of,
so
you know,
she probably thought it was like a one night stand type of deal.
I mean, you know, it's, I tried to explain it in a way that was like, you know, I'm in a band, so I, you know, I have a flight tomorrow, I have to go record, I have this commitment, blah, blah, blah. But basically, I told her, the cool thing was, I told her, like, if you want me to come back, I can come back. Because I don't have to, my job isn't, like, I don't have a job in New York or California or something. My job is playing music, so I can do that here. I mean, I was just writing music here. You know, that's where I wrote those two songs. So I was like, I can just come back. So I basically went to the studio and then I came back and now I'm here. So it's cool.
Wow. That's pretty crazy.
It's all crazy because I wasn't supposed to be here.
Exactly.
We weren't supposed to meet. So basically, if it weren't for the rain and the hole in the roof and the blah, 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 I would have never gotten here. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you wouldn't have been living in Paris. You wouldn't have been, you know, out with this girl right now. You could have a whole entire different life if it wasn't for that rain in Amsterdam.
Exactly. I could have a whole different life, and maybe the songs would be different. I mean, what's to say I would have written the same songs somewhere else with different circumstances? I mean, probably the songs would be different, honestly.
Absolutely. I mean, you had no distractions really in Paris, so you were able to just bang them out.
Yeah. And also, I mean, of course, like anyone, I was influenced by everything around me. I was walking around the city, seeing all the stuff and thinking about it, and that's just what enters into your songs, so.
Yeah. Wow. It's crazy how things work out.
It is crazy.
Yeah. So anyways, you have a new album coming out in June called Waiting for Morning to Come. And yep. I'm looking at the album art, and it's pretty cool how you have the whole traffic light thing. I'm assuming it's like a four-way stop, but you only see three traffic lights. They're all red. Where exactly did you get this motivation or inspiration, rather, for this?
So we were on tour. We were on tour with Burning Down Alaska and Capsize and Casey a few months ago, like last winter. Mm-hmm. And I was on the internet and I came across – so there's a site called WeTransfer, and you can like send files on it.
Yeah.
And you know, people are always using it to send, you know, stems and design files and Illustrator files and blah, blah, blah. So I'm always using it for stuff like – it's like Dropbox, but it's just a website that you can go to with no account and just upload something and send someone a link real quick.
Yeah.
So it's funny because I've actually found like important artists that we've worked with on WeTransfer before, because WeTransfer – again, long story short, it's because it's a really weird story. WeTransfer does this thing where when you go to WeTransfer, the functionality of the site is in a tiny little box on the left-hand side, and most of the background is some art. And it's not art that they've paid to license or that they made. It's artists that they feature without them even knowing. They just put their art up and put their name down at the bottom, and if you click on the picture, it takes you to that artist's website. The way I know this is because there was this really cool picture on WeTransfer years ago, and I thought, oh, this is awesome. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I clicked it, and it took me to the website for this photographer named Shervin Lanes. Mm-hmm. And Shervin Lanes is a photographer for Regina Spektor, which is an indie artist that I really like. And of course, and he does hundreds of more artists than that, but the first thing I saw in his portfolio was Regina Spektor. And she has these, I don't want to say famous, but I mean, if you know her music, all her album covers are a photo of her that's like very Indian, cool, and like interesting, and he takes all those. He shoots Regina Spektor's album covers. Like,
oh, that's awesome.
And so, and I loved his stuff, so I emailed him and said, hey, you know, we're going to be playing in New York City. Could we set up a shoot with you? Anyway, he shot some promos of us, and then again and again. I think he shot us three or four times. I mean, if you go to my Twitter and you see a picture of me like looking to the side, Shervin took that picture. And if you know what set that's from, Shervin took all those pictures. Anyway, Shervin was like, how did you find me? And I was like, I was on WeTransfer and your picture was the background. And he was like, oh, I didn't know that. Like, I didn't tell them to do that. And yeah. I like looked it up, and basically WeTransfer just like promotes artists that they like. So long story short, I was on WeTransfer again, and I saw this amazing picture of these traffic lights, and I found the name of the guy, and I emailed him, and he's like this German photographer art student, mm-hmm. and he took this picture of these traffic lights. It's just like gorgeous, and you look at it, and you think it's like Photoshopped or whatever, but basically you dig into it and it's not at all. It's not even edited. It's just, it's completely pure. Like, he just took it like that. And I would be okay if it was like Photoshopped or whatever, but it makes it so much cooler to think like the beams look too pure to be real.
Yeah.
But it's totally real. It was just really foggy. And I mean, he took this in German countryside, which as a band, we play a ton of shows in Germany, and Germany is a huge market for us. So we drive, I mean, I've driven hundreds of hours through the German countryside, and me and my band all know that that's what it feels like. It can be super empty and mysterious and dark and foggy. And we've had some crazy experiences just driving out there and super dark and foggy in the middle of the night. And you feel super isolated. And one time we stayed in, you know, we found some hotel or hostel that was really just like a house, and we were checking in at like 4 a.m. and I think we all remember this, like driving through this fog, and we're like, can this be it? And we pull up to this, you know, to this house, mm-hmm. and it's supposed to be where we're going to sleep because it's some hotel. And I mean, not many people are going to know this or get this unless you're in a touring band and have toured in the European countryside. But there's some hotels out there that are just like kind of like just a house where people are renting out the rooms. But it's a real – it's not like Airbnb. It's like a real – it's like a bed and breakfast.
But yeah, okay.
So there was like a proprietor. There was like a guy and a lady. But remember, this is in like – this was like the German-Swiss border, I'm pretty sure, is where we like pulled off and – this like you
so
know,
is it one of those houses in the middle of nowhere type of deal or
yeah and okay. and of course these people in the countryside we know some German but not a lot, mm-hmm. and they know some English or none, so we can't even barely speak to them, and it's all creepy and foggy outside. And anyway, they let us inside and it was really cool. And then you wake up and it's like, oh my god, we're, you know, right next to these mountains that we couldn't see last night and all this like beautiful stuff. But anyway, that's what pops into my mind when I think of fog in the German countryside. But so I saw this picture. Basically, I was on WeTransfer. I saw this mm-hmm. picture. I was like, oh my gosh, this is beautiful. I clicked through, found the guy, sent him an email, you know, said, can we use this as album art, you know, and pay you for it? And he said, yeah. So, and I showed it to my band, and we were trying to decide on album art for the album at the time. We had ideas for... we had songs and music and lyrics and stuff. We were trying to decide on album art, and I showed this to them, and everybody loved it and wanted to use it. So I think it's just about what it represents to us and the symbolism that it, you know, the message that it speaks to all of us and that it speaks to other people. It's a simple photo, but it kind of means a lot to us, especially as it relates to, you know, isolationism mm-hmm. and touring and I mean, when you tour for a living, I think roads and traffic iconography become very symbolic to you, like something like a stoplight or I have like a cathartic connection to gas stations. Like, I don't go to gas stations in Paris because I don't drive here. But mm-hmm. when I drive somewhere again, you know, in months later or whatever, when I go on tour, and the first time I stop in a gas, because to me a gas station means tour, you know, like go in the gas station, like get a iced tea, like fill it. It's just like this thing that on tour you do.
You equate with it.
You do 3 times a day, every day. I mean, we probably play 150 shows a year, 200 shows a year. So, yeah. You know, 3 times a day, 200 times a year. So, you know, 600 times a year. And the thing is, gas stations are all standardized, like chains and this and that. And so, mm-hmm. like, you're feeling this experience over and over, like even if it's not the most you know, flashy place in the world, it's just a gas station, you've just done it so many times in it, and you're always with your friends and on the road and seeing a different city every day, and you walk in the gas station and, you know, see the person and, hey, how are you doing? And, you know, 40 on pump number 2, and you know, it's just like this thing that like you connect with. So anyway, I think that iconography, the sort of traffic iconography can mean a lot to you when you tour, just something like a stoplight and a empty road, and all this can actually just, I think it can just mean a lot to you. And even if you don't tour, I think it is very symbolic.
No, I definitely agree, and I somewhat relate to that, like not the touring aspect, but more or less like I think about the same thing with like a rest stop. So if you're like going down a highway or go to like a truck stop or a rest stop type of deal, and you walk in there and you look around and you think, okay, where are all these people going? Like, this is like the middle ground of, you know, their adventure. You know, they're on the journey going to their destination. And, you know, even if it's in like New Jersey or something like that, I'd be like, oh, they could be going to the Poconos in Pennsylvania. They could be going to Atlantic City, you know, or it could be something as simple as, hey, I'm going to a sick relative's house to take care of them. Like, you don't know. And it's kind of awkward to ask them, but you know, I kind of understand your whole thing with the gas station. Like, you relate to that because, you know, it brings you to a good time in your life of, hey, I'm with my friends. I'm doing what I love to do.
Of course.
Yeah, so.
It's a crazy freeing feeling. It's like a reminder of the times that you felt the most free, like just, I mean, from the beginning, like being with your best friends before the band was successful. And when you're just driving around with your best friends being like, what are we doing? Like playing these shows, like who knows what could happen? Like, what if we, you know, this is before you've ever gone to Europe or Tokyo.
Contemplating your life and your future all.
Yeah, this is before you've played in Moscow and before you've played in Singapore and, you know, before you've played in Bangkok and you're thinking, oh, what if we play in London someday? Wouldn't that be cool? You know, it's crazy.
And then you do it.
and then you do it and then you move somewhere and it's crazy.
You fall in love with a girl you met online and...
Yeah. And now I'm doing this interview while she's trying to sleep.
Oh, damn. All right. We'll wrap things up a little bit. So again, the album comes out on June 9th. How many tracks are on this?
I think probably like we're still working on it. I'm going to add a bunch of stuff. I'd say there's probably like 9 or 10 like full like big songs, but I'm going to tie it together with some like smaller pieces of music, and it'll be like 16, maybe more than that, like some little stuff in between. If you've seen our live show in 2016, mm-hmm. then you've heard these kind of small like pieces of music that I write in between every song. So maybe in between every song there'll be another like mini song. That's kind of what I do if you watch us like play live, so maybe something like that. So
so more or less like a little interlude between each thing to basically connect the album.
Yeah exactly.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of bands don't do that. They just basically they front load the album, you know, the best like six songs they can create, and next thing you know, tracks 7 through 10, you know, they're basically shit.
I don't know. I just feel the freedom to kind of do what I want, and I like to make it weird and different and do some cool stuff with it. And so I feel like there's no reason not to. I mean, I'm not like pensive about anything like, or hesitant about anything. Like if I'm like, oh, if I want there to be 20 songs mm-hmm. and you know, 10 of them are big and have lyrics and 10 of them are instrumentals or different genres or little things that I make. I just think, why not? You know,
yeah.
If people aren't doing that, then that's even cooler, you know, and if it's something I want to do. So I like to do weird stuff.
Yeah. Which is great because, you know, going back to those bands that front load, they can only come up with like those big six songs, and then they're like, okay, you know what, here's an extra 4 random tracks I'm just gonna fucking throw on here, and you know, the forgettable tracks, while you're actually creating a piece of art that connects all these songs together, which they could be like different, you know, that they could have been written in different parts of the world but all connected through these little bridges that you're creating.
There's a lot of cool things you can do. We've all had a lot of different concepts on our albums that it's all just stuff that you make up in your own head and you never even have to tell anyone. I mean, on our second album, the one that has a cover that's like a girl sleeping.
Yep, How to Be Both Wondrously Perish.
Yeah, I always thought of it. I mean, you can't know this if I don't tell you because it's not – we don't make it obvious. But like – so on How We Both Wondrously Perish – every song gets slower. So the first song is the fastest, the last song is the slowest, and every song is slower than the one before. And I always had this idea in my head. I don't think I even told my band, but the way I saw the album is like this girl, like the first three or four songs mm-hmm. before it gets to the instrumental title track called How We Both Wondrously Perish. The first few songs are real life, are like her awake. And then the title track, How We Both Wondrously Perish, the like weird instrumental, is her like falling asleep, and the rest of the songs are just dreams, like musically. That's the way I always thought of the album, musically. It doesn't mean that's the way that Joel thought of the album lyrically, but that's the way that I thought of the album musically. So to me, the first three songs are Waking, and the fourth song is Falling Asleep, and then the last like five, six songs are like this dream that she's having. And like I said, that's just stuff that I make up, that I like do, and you can't know if I don't tell you. But it's, I think when you think of stuff like that and play with stuff like that, it communicates a message to people that they, of course they can't know exactly what I'm thinking, but they feel something cool and they like it for a reason that they don't know. I don't think everything has to be obvious. You know, I don't think I have to say this is the album cover and it's this because this, and the name of the album is, you know, Airplane Crash, and the cover is a crashing airplane. Everything is so obvious. Like, I think stuff can be really symbolic. Like, why is this girl on the front? Why is she in a bed? Like, what does it mean? How does it relate to everything? Well, maybe I, you know, chose that because I saw this whole album as like a dream sequence, but you can't know that unless you, you know, unless I say it or something. Yeah. But I just think that's cool because it lets you come up with your own idea of what you think that she is. And, you know, basically, I think it's cool.
Yeah, that is really awesome. You know, I've heard numerous concept albums, you know, Dark Side of the Moon, you know, Discovering the Waterfront by Silverstein. And just to hear this as, I don't want to say an accidental concept album, but, you know, you're not even defining it as a concept album. You're like, you know what, let me see. This is how the album is going to progress. And the fact that, you know, each track from 1 to, what is it, like 10, you know, keeps getting gradually slower and slower. And the fact that you just said that, you know, she's awake in the first three tracks, falling asleep in the fourth track, and then 5 through 10, you know, it's like a more of a dream-esque type of, you know, design with that. And I think this will open a lot more, I guess, eyes and ears listening to the album now knowing about this. And I think people are going to have a whole new perspective on this.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So are we expecting something with this new album coming out? Are you going to make everything go from slower to faster?
That was a trick we did. That was a trick we did once with like the speed thing. I don't know. We always do something interesting. There's always a reason why we do what we do, and we don't really tell anyone, and we just kind of do it. And I don't know, it's all internal, and we talk about it with each other, and we're all like this. We're all like weirdly artistic, and we're not a very like straight up band. Like we don't need or want things to be obvious. Mm-hmm. Like, if I tell my band, oh, we should name, like, we should make the song this because it, like, represents this, and, you know, every tom hit is like a gunshot and the song would be about this. But it's like, basically, we enjoy stuff that no one could possibly know, that only we know. Like the dream sequencing, like, mm-hmm. every song is like, it's like she's falling asleep and the songs get slower and slower, and this instrumental is like the start of a dream sequence. But that doesn't mean we have to name the song dream sequence or she falls asleep. It's just like we like this weird stuff that no one can really know. So, yeah, I mean, of course that stuff is going to be – I can already think of one. Basically, I'm not going to explain it because it's going to be more fun if I don't explain it. But there's a new – there'll be a new single, and I just kind of came up with the cover. And if you look at the cover – art of the single and you look at the title of the single, those two things are related, and not just the title of the single but the lyrics of the single, those two things are very related in a very symbolic way that's not obvious. So I'm not going to say more
because it would just
ruin it, but maybe in a year we can do another podcast and I'll tell you what the symbolism was.
Absolutely. That'd be fucking awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so let's wrap things up. It's 12:30 in Paris, and I know your girlfriend's probably really pissed at you for doing this, but I do appreciate the hell out of this.
she does she like manages artists through interviews like as her job, so she probably just feels like she's at work.
Especially in her home life, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, everyone says keep those two separated, but you know, when you're in a demanding job, even as a band, you really can't keep them separated. So.
Oh no, yeah. Definitely.
So, anyways, let's plug the upcoming tour. You're going out with Enter Shikari in the in the States. The Take to the Skies 10-year celebration tour, which is one of my favorite albums by them, and it's going to be a blast to see this.
Oh, yeah.
So you start off on Friday, March 10th in Pomona, California. You wrap up on Saturday, April 1st in Dallas, Texas. Tickets are on sale now or they're sold out. I mean, either or. This will sell out because Enter Shikari is getting nothing but bigger in the States, and they deserve everything.
Definitely.
Yep. So we got the new album out on June 9th, Waiting for a Morning to Come. It's your first on Equal Vision, right?
Yes, that's right.
All right, you're first there. You could like the band on Facebook, facebook.com/beingasanocean. Twitter is Being as an Ocean as well?
It's all Being as an Ocean, yeah.
Easy enough. You know, just Google Being as an Ocean, follow them, like them, subscribe, and also buy their music. They have, three albums out now? I'm sorry.
Yep,
three albums out now. Go on iTunes, get it. If you can and have Spotify, stream it. I think those the 2 cents on every, what is it, stream? Like, it's some strange thing.
I'll tell you what. I know the numbers here.
Do you really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, I do. I do know the numbers here. So if you listen to a band's album 14 times in a row, which isn't that much.
No.
If you listen to their entire album 14 times in a row on Spotify, you will earn them the same amount of royalties as if you bought it on iTunes. So that's not so bad.
That isn't bad. Wow.
It's not bad. So just listen to the album 14 times.
Exactly. Or listen to it 2 times and fall asleep and let the computer just reset itself.
That's the same thing. So do that. Go. You don't have to buy stuff on iTunes. Just go find your favorite band, listen to the album 14 times, and then it's the same amount of royalties as if you bought on iTunes, so you can do the calculation. You can look it up.
Yep, and album streams are now included with the RIAA certifications, and could be going platinum because of this.
And Chance the Rapper just got a Grammy, couple Grammys as the first streaming only artist. He's never sold any music ever.
Really?
Yep. He's
oh my god.
Completely streaming. And he just won some Grammys off of that.
That was off of the coloring book, right? That was the latest one?
Yeah.
That is a great album, and I could talk about that album for quite a while. And I think he's becoming like the more sane Kanye West.
Yeah, sure. But I love Kanye West. He's crazy, and that's awesome.
Yeah, but I 100% agree, but people need to, you know, look at his character in one perspective and then listen to the music like you don't know anything about the guy. And you're going to see how wonderful it is.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Right before I let you go, Tyler, we usually play out a song to end the podcast. Do you have any in mind? It could be a new song, could be an old song of yours, whatever.
I don't know. I always have, it's one of my favorite songs ever. I always kind of have it on my mind. So do a Skinny Love by Bon Iver.
Oh, cool. We could go that route. All right, man. Tyler, have a great night. Get some sleep. Sorry for your girlfriend for keeping her awake. And we'll definitely have a part 2 soon.
Cool.
All right, man. I'll see you in New York City in April. Or in March, rather. See ya, man.
Cool. Bye, man.
Bye.
Come on, skinny love, just let's sing it. To pour a little salt, we will never hear. My, 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 my. Staring at the sea. And I've told you.